by the haystacks, and so he didn't want them to be burned down, because that's all we had for our cow. And the life went on, but when they started to retreat, the Russians was losing the war, and then brought all these wounded ones, and there was no trucks to haul them. It was all wagon, and the officer had horses to ride, and they usually had a girlfriend with them, and then they brought them on the wagons, and some were so badly hurt, and the wagon was so bumpy. And oftentimes like I said on the other tape, I brought the water home from the well, about a block and a half to carry, and bring it home, and they brought another load of soldiers wounded. So I had to stop, and they hollered, water, water, it was hot. So gave each a drink, go back, get another bucket. It was pitiful. People, these were so badly wounded. Some of them died on the wagon when they took him back. And after the war ended, the Russians had to retreat, but they was bringing Polish prisoners, and they was past our house. They all had to walk barefooted. It was towards the fall, and they stripped just in their underwear. The underwear was some so torn that they just, and their bodies were just red from cold. And so they stopped at our house, and they must have had about 20, 25 in a convoy, and a couple of soldiers on the horses leading them from one village to the other. And they still had to go 3 miles before they could get something to eat. And they had just the underwear on, and their bodies were just red from cold. And so it was sort of halfway raining, and we had a pot full of potatoes cooking in on that little outside dig-out fireplace that we had. And some of the soldiers, these prisoners, they would reach right into that. It wasn't so bad from the top, but when they got on the bottom, they reached in and got put the last potato out of that boiling water. Hunger sure hurts. And then they went in the field. We had some more cabbage heads, and they would break off a piece of cabbage and eat it. And then when the Russian officers saw it, they just bawled them out and made them come back to the yard. And they had a roll call, sign them up again. And from there they took them 3 more miles, and there they got food first. I felt so sorry for those men. It was so cold, and they had to walk. Their feet were all worn through and some from that gravel, and no slippers on. And then the Russian army lost, and the police came in. So this was, so after the war was over, and then we had just this little house, and the winter came, and we had to get some wood from the woods. We carried it home and sawed it up, and had a little, just a little platform where we would have a iron bar on top, cooking, and underneath we feed the little fireplace. And so we had a good time. Then we went, one family had church in their house, in the Lutheran church. They had the message read out, written out in a book. And so every church, the head man would read the message. So one man down there thought he was so more religious than the other, so he just read the message. And we gathered those that wanted to go in a people's house. Their name was Keller. And they had a dugout house. Half was against the hill. You could come in, you would be on top of the roof, and on one side it was going in. It was dug out in the half, the house was dug out underneath the hill, and the other house was out. So we had church in there. There was 3 families living in this little dug house place. And one family, no, two families next to us, they were not able to build a little log house, so they dug a hole out in the, against a little hill and made a slanted roof over it so the water could run off. And they had just one room, and they had three beds in there, and a stove to cook, and a bench to eat off. That's all furniture they had. So it was really hard to make a new start in life when everything was burnt down. And so then the young people, they would come in the winter time and gather at our house, and the boys would sing songs, and sometimes we would bake potatoes in our little ashes that we had accumulated, hot ashes from all day. So life went on. It was not too bad. If you don't know any better, you just keep that up. But then we had no clothes. The clothes all just about fell off from us. And there was one girl, her name was Helen Kim, and she had two skirts, and one was pretty badly patched already. And so she said, "Dina, I'll give you my patched skirt, and I just wear the one." So we would wash it in the evening and dry it by the fireplace during the night. In the morning we put it on again. And pretty soon Albert saw that I needed clothes so bad, and so somehow, I don't know where he got the money, but he went in town and got some flannel material. What a man wouldn't buy. It was black and red check flannel material. So he bought me enough, and there was a lady, she was, she couldn't talk, and she was a sewer, she could sew. So she sewed me that skirt and a blouse out of the same material. And that's the way I had that skirt I still had when I came to America. I had another one that I got, so I had two skirts and two blouses. And then after Christmas, like I said, Daddy wrote and said he was going to send for us. And so it was in the winter. We had to go into to town to work out our papers. This was a 9-mile walk, snow in the blizzard blowing. We had no underwear, just cloth wrapped around the feet and our wooden shoes, and we had to walk in that snow. But it was dry snow. It wasn't as cold as it looked. And so one day we went, and there was a soldier. He was on a sled, had a taxi driving him into town for some business officer. And when he saw us, there was a Schilling family in us, so he loaded up all that he could on this sled, and the two boys, our oldest two boys, had to walk. But us was three girls and a lady and another boy walked a Schilling. And they took us into town, but on the way we had to walk back. We nearly froze to death. So we worked out our papers, which was hard. The Jewish people did that for us. They were all educated for that kind of a work. The first summer, before we built our, we were already building our little house. A minister was coming to through there, and he was gonna, I don't know what to call it, have confirmation for all the young people. So I had to go with my three girlfriends, and there were a few boys. We walked to a different village, was about close to 2 miles, where my aunt Petznik lived. And we went down in the morning, and then I used to go over to Aunt Petznik and had something to eat. They had church there in the house. And then we come back, and this man that read the message Sunday morning, he gave us students, how would I say it, he rehearsed us. We had to learn so much from the Bible, catechism, the Ten Commandments, and read passages in the Bible. And I was very poor in reading. So then, in must have been June or so, he comes, the minister, and then he held this confirmation in one of a great big barn in Hansharika there in the village. The houses were not burned down as many as in our village, because we was on the highway. Every village was burned down, the whole stretch. There was not one house standing, only the schoolhouse, and then the cross street had a few. And so then I got a good meal Sunday, like soup and bread or whatever she had. Then we went back for sort of rehearsal, and after about maybe three Sundays she did that. And then the pastor came one Sunday morning, and they told us not to eat any breakfast when we go to take the Lord's Supper for the first time. Be confirmed, we're not supposed to eat. In the evening, the meal was so very, very poor. And then in the morning, I wasn't eating anything. And so we walked down, and it was noontime. And the pastor, whatever they do for confirmation, we all had to go and read and say the Lord's Prayer and all this. And the minister said to me, "You're doing good with your reading, but you keep it up, you can do better." And so we were all confirmed, and we went over to my aunt, I did, for their noon meal. And then in the afternoon was again a service before the preacher went away. And I just about felt I was going to faint. I was so weak. And they brought a little old lady on the wagon. She was so sick, and I felt so sorry for her. It was hot that day, and nothing to eat. She couldn't even eat. And she came down, and the minister gave her the Lord's Supper. And the Lutheran believe that you take the Lord's Supper in forgiveness of your sin. So she was, after she had the Lord's Supper, then her sin were all forgiven. But I don't think she lasted another week. She was really sick. People try anything to make heaven their home. When they're taught that way and they live to their best of their ability, I believe they'll do just as good as being preached to death nowadays. And from there, then we moved into this house, like I said. And us young people, we really had fun. The boys had what they call a domino that they played in the evening at the table, and a little kerosene lamp, and sometimes we even had a little fire, put some sticks in that made it real light, so we didn't put the lamp on, didn't have kerosene, so that lit up the house. And the boys would play the dominoes. In the main entertainment in Russia was the spooky stories they told about the spooky stories, like, I believe I've said this, but not on tape. There was one man, and his name was Andreas. And this Andreas Keller, he had a story made up that he's going to get an everlasting dollar. And for a dollar, he could buy a lot of stuff. So he said that the devil told him that if he could get a net and tighten it up real good like a fishing net, and put a black cat in, but it had to be all black, and then take it to a crossway where two streets meet, and sort of like a cross. And then he hollered to this devil he should come and buy the cat. And so when the devil came and gave him a dollar, and he took the cat, and if the devil could untie all this net and get the cat out of there, before he got under a roof, then the dollar would go back to the devil, and he would have to repeat it. But if he leaves the cat with the devil and he runs like hell to get under a covered roof, then the dollar was his. And then he could buy anything he wanted. If he go to the store and buy himself some nice goodies to eat, and before he got back home, the dollar was back in his pocket, and the storeman was out of the money. And stories like that they would tell. And then always about the cemetery, how they saw people get out of the graves and come and look into the houses at night, because most houses had no curtains on the windows, and people were too poor. And so that was our entertainment in the winter. And when you went in the winter to, especially when the moon was shining, you could just read a newspaper or a book outside. It was so light. And then when you go on the snow, it was just clear, 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 clear. It was so dry and the air was so clear. You could hear a mile away a man walking on the snow. So in the summertime, we had lots of fun as kids. Of course, we had to work like crazy. But Daddy made us a nice swing, and we had that sour cherry tree next to the house and a sweet apple tree. And so he made it right between the two trees, and there was always a little shade on it. And Albert and Dan made us the wagons and the sleds, so they could cut pieces off from a tree and make the wagon wheels. And Daddy helped them a little bit. Of course, he was know how to do that. And Albert could do quite a bit already with Dad, because he was a fast learner. But Dan never paid much attention to it. But when they came to this country, they each were able to build houses. Dan made his living towards the less, just building houses and remodeling and doing plumbing work in the church, the whole church, the new church. He did the plumbing in it. And my cousin Alex, he was supervisor because he worked for a plumbing company. So the boys did a lot of things for us. And we really had good summers. Only we were so infested with the flies. So very many flies and mosquitoes and all that stuff that we didn't wish to have. But otherwise, it was not too bad. And then after Daddy went away, and we hauled our grain all in, and we had to go across the freeway. So we had to go for about a half a block, and then we could cross the freeway with our grain, and then go into our shed there and pile it all up on the outside. And then Mama would hire a trashing crew, and they'd come in and they'd trash it. Sometimes we could do it all in one day, like the wheat and the barley and whatever we had. And all the neighbors, it didn't cost anything, only Mama had to pay for the threshing machine for the use of that. But the neighbors all get together and help. One neighbor, and the next day they go and thresh for somebody else, and everybody goes down there. So it was just one hand feeds the other. And then Mama had to cook a great big lunch for these trashers. And she usually had rice. And oh, what a treat that was, rice and potatoes and sometimes just vegetables, lots of vegetables. And in the fall of the year, well, it was digging out the garden. That was hard. Mama had such a bad hand, her thumbs and her fingers, they would just crack from that wetness. We had to pull all the beets out and the carrots, and then she would sit on a sack and take off the head from there, all the leaves from the carrots and the beets and all that. And then us kids, we carried it into what I said on the other tape, to sort of like a root cellar. First came the potatoes, and on top we put all the vegetables on, and even had the cabbage. And then shovel it. That was our job, carrying all that in with the baskets. And Mary on one end and I on the other, and help cleaning up. And sometimes we already had little snow. And down there when the snow came, it came to stay. It wouldn't go away. But underneath the snow, we just pulled out the beets, and Mama cleaned them off. Sometimes my cousin would come over to Mildred Krause and help her for a day. That was about the hardest job that she had to do, because she got such a cracks in her fingers, and that hurt so bad. And there was no Vaseline or Band-Aids, so we had to tie a little rag around her, and that most of the time came off. So winter time was pretty good, but the falls were hard. And the summers were also in the spring of the year, when you had to plant so much. When our rain would come up, and right after the rain, Mama and all the other ladies, they had put out beet seed and carrot seed and all that stuff, mostly beets and turnips. and the carrots they put in the rows right away. And then we had to go and transplant them. So the women would take a sack and hang it over their head, and then we go out in that rain and pull out the beets, little plants and turnips, and then plant them in cabbage. And they didn't need a sack. They were just soaking wet when they came in. And the wind got cold, and mostly got cold too. But that was the winter were not bad. The summers were hard, but not too bad. But the spring and the fall, they were really bad. The first winter when Daddy was gone, then we had all our work finished, and the boys and Mary went to school, because like I said, I couldn't go. I didn't have any shoes or any clothes, so I stayed home. And Mama stayed. And then towards around Christmas time, then Mama sent me over to Millie, and I had to stay there that winter and help her with the baby and the housework. I didn't do much housework. All her daddy swept the floor and took care of the baby when she went out to help him a little bit in the shop. And that was a nice winter, and Dan came over an awful lot. And that was the winter when, what I said on the other table, we went to the Russian church and the Russian villages and saw how they made a water hole and that stuff. That was the first winter. But the second winter, it was really nice. I stayed home then with the two children, and Mama could do whatever she wanted to. Then in the evening, we would have company. The kids would come over, usually Saturday or Sunday, because during the week, the boys had to come home and do the chores, feed the horses, and help with the feeding the pigs and so on. And then after evening meal, then they had to sit down by that little kerosene lamp and do their lesson for school. And but in the Saturday and Sunday, we were free. Then we could have our playmates over, and we play in the house like hide and go seek and different kinds. And then once on a Saturday or Sunday, Mama would let us go for just 1 hour to the neighbors, and we could play there for a while. We take turns. So we had nice winters too. We just didn't have to sit in a corner and not talk and do anything. We could have fun just like people have in this country. But and we never had any popcorn to eat or something, because it wasn't invented, eaten after the meal down there. One summer, when we was harvesting the grain, cutting down the wheat, then I don't know if Daddy ran that mowing machine or somebody else, but anyway, the man that was on it, I think it was the neighbor, he saw something in the grain there, and so he just stopped his horses, and he climbed off the machine, and he looked, and there was little Albert. He had gone out to pick flowers in the wheat there. We had such a beautiful corn flowers. And there he was, the machine had chopped them all up on the bottom by his privacy. It was all chopped up. So he took that kit in his arms and he ran home. It was maybe a block and a half. And then Mama got an old sheet and she took and dipped it in ice cold water. And in meantime, he ran back and unhitched the horses and hitched them to the wagon. And then Mama had that little child in the blanket there in that cold sheet. And they rushed him to the 9 miles into town. And there was a Russian doctor, only one doctor in that town. And he stitched him up the best he knew how. But he said, I don't know if that kid will ever walk. All these muscles and everything was cut up there. And up to now, when I was last in Florida, and he lifted his pant leg a little bit too high up to let me see something about his leg there, and I saw some of those cut marks, and I just looked the other way. But I don't know how he made it, and Mama could not hardly stand anything that was bloody. But she stood at that time, she just wrapped him all up. And children sometimes will do that. They just, summertime, everybody's busy. So they take a notion and they just go out in the field. And if he had gone horses had gone just one or two steps, the kid would have had lost his legs and everything would have been chopped off. So things do happen sometimes with little guys that can't stay home and play at home. But that was the only accident that I know that in our family ever happened. And this was a very cute one too. My mama had, she called him uncle, but he was really not her uncle. Somehow he was related with grandma or great-grandma. And that was from my father's side, and my grandfather's side. And so we all called him Uncle Bain. And he was a man that was close to 90, I guess. And he had a little tiny house, a few acres. And there he lived with a girl that was his niece, I think, and her name was Paulina. She also came with us to Siberia, but she's still there. I don't know what happened. We got lost from each other when we had to go with Sam to the hospital. They sent her away and we stayed there. But this man came twice a year. He had a gunny sack on his back, and then he had little tiny bags in there in the gunny sack, and he would collect, go from house to house begging. And then they each gave him, whoever wanted to, a big slice of bread. In Russia, we have these round breads and rye bread. So he sliced a piece off and cut it in half and gave him half. And when he went from day to day, that dried out there in that sack on top of his back. So twice a year he came to Christina, that's my mother. "Now, Christina, how are you?" he said. And so us kids, "Oh, here comes Uncle Ben, here comes Uncle Ben." And he said to us, "You know, children, what I have in this gunny sack?" He says, "Some have little dogs in there and some carry little babies in there. But," he says, "I carry rabbit bread." And he says, "And I'm going to do a treat for you. I'm going to give you each a piece of rabbit bread." So he opened up his bag and he broke a big piece in half and gave like little Lydia and Sam and myself just a half a piece. And we ate this rabbit bread. And oh boy, was that good. Comes from Uncle Bain. Then in the mama would feed him, and then we'd go out, the boys go out in the barn and get a couple armfuls of straw. And then we bed him down on the floor closer to the stove in the bake oven where it wasn't so drafty. And there he'd go to sleep. In the morning he'd get up and eat breakfast and say goodbye to mama, and then he'd go away again. And we just looked forward for that Uncle Bain to come so we could get some more rabbit bread. And he would have lots of stories to tell. And of course we were too little to understand what that meant. And he said one time he came to a lady's house and she had cut her wrist. She was cutting bacon. And the bacon, they took this big piece of bacon in the hand and then they sliced it towards them instead of putting that on a board and slice it away from them, and she accidentally cut her wrist. And it was bleeding, and she says she was almost dead. I guess he made it worse than it was. And so he said, "I'm going to, say a prayer over it or something, and it'll get better." So he went and he pushed his hand close together to this cut piece and held it for a while and said there a few words and talked to her again and kept it for about 15 minutes and then he let go and it had glued itself together. And then he took a piece of rag and tied it tight together so it wouldn't come apart. And the people really believed that he could do miracles or bewitch something like that. Then we sold in spring of the year a cherry tree. And there was a man, a Russian man, they came every year and bought, but this time he came along and he had a wooden leg. And we couldn't see how in the world that man could crawl on the tree and pick cherries, which is 1 foot, and then have this wooden cane on the bottom. But that man could crawl and he could pick cherries more than the others could. And they did a very good job. And then we had in the Russian village one time a very big thunderstorm. And the lightning hit one man and knocked him down, so they took and dug a deep hole and put him in for, I think it was 20 hours or so, and let him in, and that draw the lightning out, I guess, or something. Then after that, they pulled him out and scrubbed him off, but he couldn't talk anymore, but he was alive. He could plow with the horses and everything. So I don't know. It just seems like they can help themselves sometimes with just little things. So I see this tape as well. It makes a funny noise once in a while, and I don't know what that is. I hope, Gertrude, that you can get something out of it. If not, just throw it away. It isn't worth anything in a way. I don't know why I can't think of better things to say. When I want to say it, they always run away, and I can't think of it.